Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
This is a special holiday edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined by Daryl Good, ag economist at the U of I, to take up the previous growing season and what we can look forward to in terms of commodity prices for 2014. Daryl, thanks so much for being with us. It was a unique year again in 2013, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really I guess they all are anymore, a very unique growing season. We had a lot of delayed planting in some areas and ended up with a lot of prevented planted acres. In the most recent update, FSA is saying 3.6 million acres of corn intended for planting that didn't get planted last year. But eventually we got a lot of acres planted, 95 million. We had a very good early part of the growing season, excellent pollination weather for the most part, and what we found out is pretty high populations of corn on average. And then we got into a real mixed scenario in August and September with some dryness and some heat, and raised a lot of concerns about what that would do to yield potential, but ended up with a yield fairly close to trend value for 2013, which I think surprised many of us given the nature of the growing season we had. But I think it's a reminder that if you do get the crop pollinated well, then you still have the potential for very good yields, and that's where we ended up this past year.
Yeah, despite the prevent plant acres that were fairly large, especially in the northern, north-central part of Iowa, south-central part of Minnesota, and an average yield, we had enough acres left that it's the number one production in total for corn that the United States has ever raised.
It really is. It's a crop currently forecast close to 14 billion bushels. We'll look forward to USDA's final estimate in the second week of January, but would guess that it would be close to the most recent forecast, right in that 14 billion bushel range. So it is a crop that's large enough to allow a substantial increase in consumption, which we are experiencing at this point, and also allow for some significant buildup of stocks by year end.
And USDA and their December WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, looked out and said exactly what most people understand and know, which is that producers didn't sell a lot of grain ahead of time, and they have much yet to market. And USDA said, well, that's going to be at a lower cash price than we thought just a month ago even.
Right. I think on average they lowered their price projection by a dime, but I think it does indicate that there was not much corn sold prior to harvest, as you indicated, and now it looks like we're not going to see a significant post-harvest recovery in prices. So kind of the prices that we've been experiencing here in October, November, early part of December is probably our expectation for the year, you know, in the low $4 range is what we're going to have, and end up the year probably, you know, in the low $4 range as an average. And sharp decline from what we've had the past 3 years.
In the month of July, you were advocating making sales of the 2013 crop for the fall. I'm wondering, if you haven't marketed, whether you would say pull the trigger sooner rather than later at this point.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look out and you say, until we get into summer weather, what's really going to turn this market around to the upside? And you just really do not see a lot at this point. So if you're incurring some commercial storage costs, you say there's really not much prospect in holding on to large quantities of the corn. We're always, I guess, surprised by something. And we could find a bullish surprise as we move through the year. That's why we call them surprises, I guess. So holding on to some bushels for that is not unrealistic, but I think for the most part recognize that the fundamentals suggest that the current prices are going to be maintained for a while.
Let's take the three primary usages and see if there's any place that a surprise might show up. Start with domestic feed usage.
Domestic feed use, we don't know much about yet because we don't have yet our first stocks report for the marketing year. We'll get that in January. Tell us December 1 stocks, and then we can calculate how much feed was done in the first quarter of the marketing year. USDA has forecast a sizable increase in feed and residual use for the year, I think for maybe three reasons. One, we are seeing some uptick in livestock numbers, beginning with broilers primarily, and probably some minor increase in hog numbers. We'll see that report later in the month. Secondly, there is a history that when you have a big crop and low prices, the so-called residual category or unexplained use of corn does go up. So we have that going for us. And then thirdly, as we look to next summer, when wheat prices are quite high relative to corn prices, we're not likely to have the competition from wheat that we've had the past two summers, a very large wheat feeding both of those years. That's not likely to happen this year. That will probably put a little more demand towards corn. So we're optimistic that feed and residual use will be sharply higher this year, but we're really anxious to get that first stocks number so we can see how the progress is going. So it's kind of good news that we're using more, but recognize that we're using more because the price is low. And that's not really a basis for expecting higher prices because then you short-circuit the increase in consumption.
The next one would be in terms of total usage, ethanol in the United States and Washington is involved, but I don't know how much of a change that will make for this marketing year.
For the current marketing year, we would expect corn ethanol kind of rebound where it was before 2012-13. We were down last year on ethanol production because our exports were off a bit, and we did draw down inventories of ethanol. Domestic ethanol consumption was flat. There was no decrease in ethanol domestically, but we just used up inventory and exported less. Coming back this year, we would expect, since we have pulled down our inventories and we probably have prospects for a little better export market, that corn use for ethanol will rebound back towards that 5 billion bushel mark and be a very strong demand base for us going forward. Right now we're seeing extremely high ethanol prices, suggest that the market is caught short a little bit on ethanol. We are seeing surprisingly a fairly notable increase in gasoline consumption domestically. That means that we have more room to blend ethanol than we thought we would. So I think that market looks to be very strong for this year and into next year as well.
Would it be limited by U.S. EPA's proposal on the RFS?
No, there's really no limit on on ethanol consumption. The RFS sets a floor, sets a minimum amount of ethanol that has to be either consumed or satisfied with previous discretionary blending in the form of RINs, but there is no really ceiling on the amount of ethanol. And presumably if corn and ethanol prices were low enough relative to gasoline prices, there would be some momentum towards more E85 that could expand ethanol production. We're not quite there yet, but that certainly could happen.
Does it concern you, that piece of legislation, at all over the long run? I understand the short-term floor effect, but does it have an effect over a longer-term period?
It does, to the extent. I don't think it's really a rollback in terms of corn use and ethanol consumption relative where we've been. What it does is take some of the steam out of potential growth of export or of ethanol consumption going forward. If we stayed with the original mandates, then that would have forced more E85, more E15. And now we're taking some of that steam away so that we probably will not see the growth in corn and ethanol consumption that would have occurred otherwise, but it's really not a step back from where we were.
And your view on the export market for corn?
Export, we're seeing a very good response to the large supply of corn here and the lower prices. The U.S. is very competitive in the world market for corn now, and we're seeing quite large sales and pretty rapid movement of corn that makes us pretty confident that we can get back to 1.5 billion bushels this year, double what we did last year. There is a little bit of concern, I think, near term because China has rejected, I think, 3 cargoes of corn because of unaccepted GMO detection there. But it's interesting when you look at the weekly export sales, they're continuing to buy small quantities of corn each week from the U.S. And you have to wonder if the GMO issue is not just some camouflage for they bought corn at too high a price and looking for a reason to replace that with lower priced corn. I don't know that, but you kind of suspect that that may be happening. So the export market looks very solid, 1.5 billion bushels I think we can do this year. The problem is, with all of those numbers, it still leaves a pretty sizable carryover at the end of the year, and that means now going forward, the big determining factor for prices is what happens to U.S. production in 2014. Do we cut back because of the low prices and building inventories, or is it full steam ahead in terms of corn production and then even larger stocks next year?
Turn your attention to that 2014 crop. In July, rather than in December, you started talking about the next year's crop and saying it's time to market. You've not done that in my history with you. You saw something then that obviously is coming to fruition at this point. I suppose it was a lot of acres and the ability to produce a lot of corn without a new demand base somewhere.
Right. Yeah, you could kind of see 2 or 3 things happening in the big picture. One is building inventories in the U.S. and recognizing that 2014 prices were still high enough to attract continued corn production next year. There was really no incentive there being reflected in the market for producers to reduce acreage and to cut back production. Secondly, you could kind of see this plateauing of certainly ethanol demand for corn, the rapid growth we've had since 2006, you could see coming to an end here. And then thirdly, we were just, I think, realizing what response the rest of the world has had the last several years to the high prices of corn. We have seen a substantial increase in corn production in the rest of the world. So you kind of put those pieces together. You say expanding production, plateauing demand, and no incentive to cut production here made you a little negative about prices going into next year.
You remained that way?
A little bit. We continue to see those prices stable to a little bit weaker, moving below $4.50 now, I think, for December 2014. And so we're starting to look at some bids that are close to what we're receiving for this year's crop. And I worry a little bit that if we don't cut production, if we keep the acres and we have a good growing season, that those prices will be even lower by the time we get to harvest next year.
The work Hughes and Scott Irwin had done early on, 5-6 years ago, suggested that there would be a new midpoint cash price, I think, of about $4.60, $4.72. I think $4.60 is the right place. With carryout approaching 2 billion bushels, what's kind of the range if we say we're at that plateau, we're at the new midpoint, what kind of range are we thinking of?
Well, you know, at that time, I think it was kind of in the last half of 2008, we put out the piece and we said, based on price patterns in the previous 30 years, now that we've moved to a newer, higher plateau, what do we expect the average to be and what do we expect the range to be? And as you said, we projected $4.60 corn. But looking at Illinois prices on a monthly average basis, we said even with a 460 average, you would expect prices to be between $3 and $7. Again, not in terms of extremes, but in terms of monthly averages. So what we've seen the last 3 years, we've been well above that average, and you know, close to $8 corn at one time, and now we're swinging back towards the midpoint of that range. And if we do have a big crop in 2014, we're probably going to spend some time below that average. You know, that the lower end of the range that we projected, probably we will see in 2014-2015 with, you know, some $3.50 corn, I think is not unrealistic. Really doesn't change our thinking that $4.50 is an average price, but now that we spend a lot of time above average, we've got to spend some time below average if that average is going to work out.
More with Darrell Good when we return here on Commodity Week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look back at the agricultural weather highlights of 2013. The start of the year saw plentiful precipitation to erase the short-term but extreme drought of the summer of 2012. And the contrast between the 2 years was really felt starting in March. After record-breaking warmth in 2012 across the Corn Belt, March 2013 was one of the top 10 coldest in more than a century. In fact, on the first day of spring, soil temperatures across Illinois averaged more than 20 degrees colder than in the year prior, ending thoughts of early planting. Then thoughts of on-time planting became just a dream for many producers as rain fell frequently in April and May. It was the fourth wettest April and 12th wettest May in Illinois since 1895, and similar conditions occurred across the Corn Belt. Planting eventually advanced to completion, and crops benefited from soil moisture provided by what was the wettest first 7 months on record in Illinois. That soil moisture turned out to be very important as the second half of summer was extremely dry. Just how dry was it? In Champaign-Urbana, for the 60-day period from the morning of August 3rd through October 2nd, just 0.7 of an inch of rain fell. Average is about 7 inches. This extreme dry period especially impacted soybeans. Now attention focuses on the largest soybean exporting region of the world, South America, where the growing season is off to a good start. The only problem of note thus far is slow corn planting in Argentina. First it was too dry and then too wet. Argentina and southern Brazil are now in a dry weather pattern, not problematic yet, but something to watch. Meanwhile, the rest of the soybean areas of Brazil are receiving plentiful rainfall. Of course, we'll monitor South America's weather closely throughout our winter. For Commodity Week, I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
You're listening to a special holiday edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We continue now our conversation with U of I ag economist Darrell Good. When we left him, we were discussing the new midpoint for corn. That's at $4.60. He and Scott Irwin did the same kind of work for soybeans.
We did, and we suggested that the average soybean price would be a little over $11 a bushel. Probably in a very wide range, you could see monthly average prices as low as $7 a bushel and as high as $17 a bushel. We've seen the upper end of that. We have not yet seen the lower end, and $7, I think, seems unrealistically low at this point. But even then, you say if you're going to average 11, you could see prices, you know, between $9 and $17. And so I think we're moving back down from those higher prices to now towards the midpoint of our price range. And if we have another large crop next year, maybe slightly below the average price that we projected.
Soybeans as opposed to corn seem to be holding value better for the old crop, maybe even for the new crop at this point. Are there good reasons for that to happen?
There is. I mean, for soybeans, we've seen two things. One, in 2012, production wasn't hurt as bad as corn. And in 2013, we didn't see as big a production response as we did on corn. So the crop size has been more steady on soybeans than it has on corn. But the big factor is just Chinese demand for soybeans remains very, very robust. We're selling huge quantities of soybeans, both from the U.S. and South America, into that market. And that's keeping U.S. inventories at basically pipeline levels. USDA, again, is projecting only 150 million bushels stocks at the end of this year. So we've had, you know, kind of steady production, extraordinarily strong demand, very tight stocks of soybeans, and that's held soybean prices up longer than corn prices. But now if we get some continued production response, probably has already happened in South America, on track for a very large harvest in a few months down there. And if U.S. producers do switch a few acres to soybeans in 2014, then we start moving back down on the price range on soybeans as well. Slowly, but we'll see the 13 give away to 12 and maybe to $11.
There was a point at which the work you were doing on the RFS, you and Scott Irwin, was suggesting that soybean oil for diesel fuel, soy diesel consumption, would really drive this marketplace. Has that changed? Has U.S. EPA's current proposal changed what might happen? Where does that stand today?
Yeah, I think absolutely it has. I think the proposed EPA regulations have been much more significant for soybean oil, vegetable oil in general, than for corn in the near term, because what we were seeing is you have a very high mandate for renewable fuel, ethanol, that really could not be met because of the blend wall. And so what we were seeing is that that very high mandate then would have to be filled by biodiesel. And if the mandate was not lowered and continued to go up over time as it was scheduled, then it means you got the blend wall. You could expand that slowly with E85 and E15, but not fast enough to meet the mandate. And you would have to continue to fill that shortfall with biodiesel. And with not only the renewable mandate going up, but the total mandate going up, you started looking at very large quantities of biodiesel and therefore vegetable oil feedstocks that would be required to meet that. I think now the EPA proposal, at least, just knocks the bucket out from underneath that, saying that we're going to lower the total, we're going to lower the advanced, we're going to lower the renewable, and biodiesel looks more steady going forward.
It actually fixed a problem.
It fixed a problem, and I think some would argue maybe even was more aggressive than needed, given that we have capacity to produce biodiesel. And in 2013, we're going to produce well above the mandate and probably could have continued to fill that gap with biodiesel without being really too disruptive to markets for vegetable oils in general. So, you know, some slowing down of the mandate, I think, was a reasonable expectation and a reasonable response. I think what some are arguing is that it was more aggressive than needed to be.
It's clear, I guess, that the American farmer, in both for corn and soybeans, has and can manage to feed and fuel the nation and parts of the world.
It can, but, you know, as long as we have reasonable weather and good yields, then we can have crop sizes that result in what I call reasonable prices to both producers and users of those commodities. Unfortunately, what we got into the last few years was a shortfall in production, minor in 2010, a little more in 2011, then very large shortfalls in 2012, and resulted in sharply higher prices. Now what we're seeing is we've still got that demand base, but production has rebounded back, and prices are now at, I guess, for end users at least, at more reasonable levels. and maybe becoming a little too low for producers given the current cost structure. But as long as we have good weather in the U.S. and in most of the rest of the world, we can produce what we need.
Old crop soybeans, market now, leave them in the bin. What do you do?
You know, I continue to think that given the price structure, you know, the inverted market, the fact that soybean prices are very high relative to everything else right now, and continued good development of the South American crop. I know USDA raised their forecast of the Argentine crop. Some private analysts have even a much larger estimate for the Brazilian crop. And so I think all the indicators are that we are going to slowly move lower on soybean prices. You know, it'll be erratic. We'll have price spikes up. But I think the trend is lower as we go forward. And in general, that speaks to selling sooner rather than later.
New crop as well?
I think new crop as well. You know, my hedge statement on new crop is always a timing because of the crop insurance situation, that once we have crop insurance prices established in February, then it provides major downside risk, price risk coverage for those who are taking crop insurance. So, you know, we've got this 2 to 3 month window here between now and the end of February saying how much downside risk is there in new crop soybean prices. And I think there's probably some. It may be limited until we actually see the South American crop. But I think they're going to move slowly lower, which says getting some price protection in place is probably a good idea.
That is your general statement. You wavered from it for corn in July of 2014. We're at a much lower price. I'm doubtful that you would ever look out at the 2015 crop year at this point.
You know, it's tempting to look out at 2015 because there's a premium all the way out. 2014 is higher than this year. 2015 is higher than next year. But, you know, that's a lot of water to go under the bridge between now and the harvest of the 2015 crop. I would be pretty reluctant to be aggressive on that crop.
Final topic, acreage. There's a lot of debate about what corn and soybean acreage will look like in 2014. We have a lot of water yet to go under the bridge on that one. But at this point, what do you see?
Well, I start with two or three facts, I guess. One is we need to recognize we had, according to FSA, 8.3 million acres of cropland that did not get planted in 2013. That with more normal weather conditions will get planted in 2014. So you've got 8 million acres or more that has to find a home next year that wasn't planted this year. I think on net we had another 1.6 million acres come out of the CRP in 2013. So you're getting awfully close to 10 million acres of new cropland looking for a home next year. And suggest to me that we are going to have a lot of acres of all the major crops. Some shift, I think, to more soybeans. The budgets that Gary Snitke and others put together would suggest that at current prices, soybeans would maybe look more attractive than continuous corn, for example. We'll also get a reading in early January with the winter wheat seedings report to see how much acreage might have been shifted to wheat this year. But bottom line is, I just see a lot of corn and soybean acres in 2014.
Thank you so much, Darrell.
Thank you, Todd.
Darrell Good, Ag Economist for the University of Illinois. You're listening to a special holiday edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, reminding you that beginning in January of 2014, Commodity Week will have a new time on our home radio station. We'll air live at 2:36 each and every Friday immediately following the closing market report.